You are listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. Join him as he and his guests discover how businesses thrive in California.
Well, welcome to The Pilgrim on the 405 on this wonderful sunshiny day here in Southern California. We're talking to Jared Rosenthal, who is in New York, and I don't think it is as sunny and warm in New York as it is here. So welcome, Jared.
Thank you. Good morning.
So Jared is working with a platform to help small businesses hire fearlessly at staffglass.io. So Jared, tell us a little bit what is this project about?
Well, Staffglass is really a platform for small and medium-sized businesses, entrepreneurs, something that I feel really passionately about as an entrepreneur myself, as a way to provide them a platform to have the resources that larger businesses would have at a fraction of the cost, because we're really challenged by especially the acceleration of this trend during a pandemic of bigger businesses growing and smaller businesses falling by the wayside. And we want to give small businesses an opportunity to compete. So the first phase of Staffglass is allowing small businesses to compete on the onboarding process, to have an easy, fully cloud-based platform for integrated onboarding of employees.
Well, so when you say small business, how do you define small business?
Well, really, we work with thousands of businesses, and they range from an individual, let's say a guy who owns his own truck and needs to complete with certain regulatory requirements with regard to drug testing and such. And, you know, companies that grow to 100, 150, even up to 500 employees is still sort of in that medium business range. When you compare with something like Amazon, who hired 400,000 employees in the last 8 months, you know, 500 employees is a drop in the bucket.
Right. When I work with my clients at the Entrepreneurial Operating System, what we look for is 10 to 250 employees. So it sounds like we're working with similar niches.
Absolutely.
All right. So when somebody, what kind of problems would somebody have that would cause them to call you?
So the platform currently facilitates that entire new hire process. So if you want to bring somebody on, there's certain things you have to do, such as get them a drug test or run a background check, occupational health services, such as, potentially checking their antibodies to COVID or getting them a vaccine to COVID, or other type of tests that have always been done for occupational health over time, like pre-employment physicals or other titers or vaccines. And we put all of that into one platform. So, you know, rather than looking around the country for a clinic for a drug test, then trying to find a background check company, then looking for a clinic for somebody else in a different area and having to work with three different softwares, we just put it all in one place. So that it's the power of a single employee record that facilitates a lot of the efficiencies here. So just by having one record, you don't have to enter and find different three different softwares and find three different systems and track down results and remember passwords. Everything's in one place all over the country at the touch of a button.
So now if a company, a lot of the companies that I work with have outsourced HR people, would this be valuable to them as well?
Sure. I mean, if you're referring to the outsourced, the HR companies that do that, absolutely. We work with a lot of staffing companies. They appreciate it right off the bat because they have to do this all the time. So, you know, if they're hiring 10, 20, 50 people a week, it's so much easier for them to just have one place to go and you know, with just enter a zip code, get your clinic, and send off the barcode to that individual. It shows up at the home. They walk into the clinic. The other, you know, real advantage for small businesses now is a lot of us, we're still, you know, paper-based in some ways or more touchy-feely, hands-on, look someone in the eye, hand them a piece of paper. And, you know, with work from home, you just can't do that most of the time. You know, you have things like Zoom, but how do you get somebody a piece of paper? So by making the whole process digital, it just allows small businesses to achieve that, you know, those scalability opportunities that big businesses, take for granted.
Mm-hmm. So now Are there other companies that are doing similar things to what you're doing?
There are certainly HR software companies. There are certainly other drug testing companies, background check companies. The power of what we do is bring it all into one platform to make it much more efficient and much more easy to use.
Mm-hmm. And so you're primarily working with onboarding.
Correct. StaffGlass currently is an onboarding platform with some other modules in the work that I can talk about. But currently, it's an onboarding platform for all the services you need to bring someone on. Let me tell you just like a brief anecdote. I mean, we worked with one company that was hiring hundreds of seasonal workers for one of the big box retailers for Christmas last year. And we started to talk to them. They were doing some drug testing with us. And they mentioned, no, they're doing background checks, but that was with another company. I started getting, you know, I said, hey, we do that also. I said, well, what are you doing for, you know, payroll? And they had another company for payroll, and then they had another company for time and attendance. And then the workers were texting pictures of their time cards in that they were entering into another system. And I said, well, we're using that system because the retailer needs that one for you to get paid. Nope, we use another system for that. It was unbelievable. I mean, they had 7 to 10 discrete systems with separate logins, tracking things separately. How can you possibly run a business that way? How could you possibly keep track of everything? Mm-hmm. And, you know, by pulling that all together and using that sort of as a use case to say, hey, let's build this in one place, make it sensible, wipe out all that waste. And of course, all the errors that come with it. I mean, you just can't imagine how many errors you have when you get typed the same thing 7 times, you know? So
was one of the modules you're talking about going to be payroll?
We're working towards that. Yeah, we're starting with the onboarding, and we're working backwards all the way through the initial point of the hiring process. So you can imagine all the things that happen when someone looks for a job. First, company posts a job. A person goes out and searches, you know, for what opportunities are out there. Then there's a job application. We're going to be launching a module for that. Then there's the analysis of the job application. Then there's the interview process, which can now be done digitally over Zoom if you know, the company wants to do it that way. The evaluation of the candidates, then new hire paperwork. And then at some point it gets to where we are now, which is, okay, let's make an offer. We have e-sign capabilities built in already. So let's get that offer letter signed, get that background waiver signed, run the background check, get them their drug test. Once we pull all that into the system, you're ready to onboard. And then we move on to things like running payroll and ongoing HR activities like annual evaluations and stuff.
Well, one of the things that I would like to see in a system like this is, what does the first 90 days look like? What is in the calendar for training, for onboarding process? How does that fit? And that should be, to my way of thinking, that should be a non-negotiable. This has to happen, that you have some sort of plan in there for how you're going to train these people and bring them on board in the first 90 days.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, having been a small business owner myself, we sometimes let certain things slip by the wayside. We don't have a formalized training program yet. So the idea with StaffGlass is to create a place for all that in the same place, not having to go look for another platform or whatever, but just say, all right, we just onboarded them. We'll send them that offer letter. But contingent on that offer letter, we'll say, here's your plan for the next 90 days. And it's going to track what happens. It's going to make sure you completed the course. Ideally, you would pass a test and say, all right, now I am qualified, or I've passed this training, or I've absorbed what I've been meant to learn during that period.
We are in the process of finishing a refinance with a company called Loan Depot here. And it's amazing. I responded to an email from them because my old mortgage was 6 months old, but the rate dropped so much that it was time, you know, there's a good thing to refinance. All I had to do was say, do it, click about 12 buttons, and next week they're going to come to the house and resign the documents. That was it. That's amazing, isn't it?
The difference between an elegant software solution and a clunky one is incredible. And when it's elegant, sometimes you don't even realize, you just go, oh, that was easy. And you don't realize how much work went into making it that smooth. Mm-hmm. That's our goal. We want our software to be elegant. You want to feel good using it and be like, wow, that was a breeze. And that enables us as entrepreneurs and small businesses to get back to doing what we really love to do, which is the work, the content of the work that we're of the business that we're running, not paperwork and things like that. So when you get an elegant solution, it just feels good. And that's our goal. I'm sort of obsessed with what we call the UX, the whole user experience.
All right. So talk to me a little about what have you observed as the user experience during COVID for people, for companies?
Yeah. Well, I mean, sure. I mean, just it's the recognition that you need to have everything cloud-based. When I say cloud-based, meaning you just obviously you can't have paper. That's a non-negotiable, if people are still tracking things like that, storing records, especially important legal records like HR records, you just can't do it anymore, right? And then being able to do things digitally that utilize what people have, devices in their pockets, sending barcodes to phones rather than mailing things out. I mean, these are sort of really prerequisites now. You just got to do them, and of course it's accelerated other trends that, the more nimble you are as a business digitally, the better you're doing, the less prepared you were to be digital in terms of delivering your own goods and services, the worse off you're doing during COVID.
So have you noticed that companies are making that switch?
Well, I think what happened with COVID is it happened so fast that if you weren't already prepared, you would have a lot of difficulty making that switch because probably you were resisting it all along. And, one thing that I would say is just, as a business person, scalability is so important. We all were passionate about what we do, but also, you want to grow it. You want to be able to increase your income. You want to be able to increase the size of your business, right? And digital just provides a way of doing that is so much greater than anything else in terms of scalability that there's just really no alternative. And if that's not clear to you yet, you really have to look at that as a business, because to be able to, let's take one example of my call center. So we started without any digital orders at all. When I started Health Street, which is a company that does the drug testing, we put a bunch of people in the room. The more the phone rang, the more people I had to hire, the more people I had to train. Great. We still have a call center, but we're doing about 10 times the business we did when there's nothing digital, because when the phone rings, there's only so many calls you could take at the same time. And if you need to hire and you need to put them through 90 days of training, you can't nimbly react to an increase in demand. With the website, if you're processing the orders online, there's no limit. I mean, theoretically there's a limit, but you're really not going to hit that. If you're conducting a reasonable amount of business, you can go from 10 to 100 in an hour and handle that without a blink, because it's all digital. At a certain point, yes, you need more servers and technical stuff, but the ability to scale is just so far greater. And so if you're not, doing it, if you weren't doing that already, you're certainly scared now because of COVID, and a lot of business, unfortunately, went out of business because they weren't able to deliver their products directly. But it's just a better way to do it. If you figure out where in your business you can digitize and start there.
I have an idea that what the businesses that went out of business were not able to creatively deal with the COVID constraints.
Right.
And that just doubled down on the switch that was happening, the change in the way we do business. And so the businesses that went out, the people who were entrepreneurs, my belief is they're going to come back. They will create new businesses, but it won't be on the platforms that they had before.
Yeah, well, certainly not if they went out of business and they realized what the deficiencies were. So I think that's the real lesson. But the scary part, and this is a real urgency right now, is that there's a real threat to small business just in general. think if Amazon hired 400,000 people in the last 8 months, that's 400,000 people that are no longer working at probably another small business. And why is that happening? And what can entrepreneurs do to push back against that effectively from a cost standpoint? We got to be able to deliver products that can compete. And also just from, a labor standpoint, we need to, do we want to live in a society where 90% of the people are working for, 10 or 20 huge companies, and then left unchecked, we don't have ways of running good, small and medium sized businesses. That's where it's headed.
Well, I agree with you. I mean, it's creating good small businesses. And when you talk about products, Amazon doesn't, other than their Alexa products, they're not a product company. They're a logistics company. And what I've discovered is that a lot of very creative entrepreneurs are using that platform. I just finished a book, right? Now, if I had done traditional publishing, it could have taken me 2 or 3 years to write the book and get it published. And I wrote that book in 2 weeks. It's 10,000 pages, and it'll be up on Amazon by the end of this week.
That's fantastic. But yep. No, I was going to say, you own the content. You wrote it, and you're using that platform to deliver that content.
Yes. And that, to me, is the wave of the future, is creating the products. Whether it's a textual product or any other product, but using the logistics that Amazon has perfected. I mean, Amazon has not only created its own logistics, but they have influenced the other companies around them to change their logistics. Right now, I heard this morning that Best Buy. You can order from Best Buy, and if it's local, if it's in a local store, they will ship it from the local store to you rather than from their warehouse. That's a shift, and people are becoming, to survive, you have to be nimble and creative, which to me is entrepreneurial.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think another part of this is taking a look at, aspects of the business that you hadn't considered before. Let's look at your example here of, let's say you owned a small business and you're in a high traffic area. So you're paying a lot of rent. You have high real estate costs. In New York, it's a, a huge issue, right? Mm-hmm. So I look at that and I say, well, if you're a small business and you're selling electronics and you're going to ship from your store, does it make the most sense in the long run? In the short run, you have a lease, you got to be there. You're there anyway, do your deliveries, but does it make sense maybe to get a warehouse in a lower rent area and do your deliveries from there? Does it, does it make sense as a restaurant to, if you turned into a ghost kitchen for 90% of your business, do you need the real estate cost at all? Maybe that's not what they want to hear because it's not that dream of running that restaurant and having your ambiance or whatever. But from a financial standpoint, does it make more sense to either move to a ghost kitchen or create one separately to do all that delivery where you can get efficiencies, lower rent, effective delivery options as well?
Yeah, because to me, these are the entrepreneurial questions. And these are the conversations that lead to small businesses. That's what got us to all the small businesses before COVID. And COVID hastened and then also brought its own constraints that eliminated a lot of businesses because they weren't able to manage that. And so when they come back, I believe they're going to be able to create systems that are protected. They're no longer vulnerable to those particular kinds of shifts.
Yeah. Yep. And I think, and part of that is getting rid of any costs that you don't need to have. So right. If you don't need to have a cost of, let's say, publishing a book in paper and stocking it and keeping inventory and shipping it and dealing with all of that, then don't. Why would you do that? Amazon, we use for their cloud services, AWS, Amazon Web Services. Why buy I've over the years bought a bunch of servers, you know, probably spent $50,000 in what do you need that for when you can just pay Amazon to use what you need only when you need it. And at the exact moment you need more, you know, whereas before I'd say, okay, I need another server. Let's pay another $10,000. And no, you only go up that 2% increase exactly what you need when you need it. And, you know, so those things just make it impossible to compete if you're not doing that, because it's so much more effective.
Well, when electricity first came in around the turn of the 20th century, first came in, companies had their own generators.
Right.
Right? And it wasn't until people like General Electric put together a network, a system where you bought electricity. And that's exactly how we buy electricity today. We don't buy big bulk electricity. We buy we pay for electricity as we use it, which is what you're doing with AWS, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And so that's exactly what I'm doing with books. When I ship that content to Amazon, they make it ready. I can deliver it via ebook on Kindle, or I can print on demand. It costs me $2.15 for that 60-page book to be delivered to me.
Wow.
Now, somebody else is going to pay $6, $8, $10 on Amazon, but I can give it away to my prospects and clients for $2.15.
Wow. And I would also say that the speed with which you can do it. I mean, you mentioned you did it in 2 weeks, but the speed compared to going through a publishing process, having meetings, flying somewhere to talk to a publisher, you know, I mean, the amount of more business you can generate just by saving all that wasted time. And that's really the message. Get rid of anything that you don't need to be spending time on. If you don't need to be, you know, having a server closet and checking the air conditioning to make sure that the server is cool enough, get rid of all that expense. If you don't have to fly anywhere, you can do the meeting on Zoom, get rid of that expense. Right. Because you have to be nimble. And all that time savings allows you to then focus your creative energy on your core business.
Well, your core business, and the core business is producing the product or the service, providing the service, and then it's also being creative and strategic about the things we're talking about now, about how that business is nimble, how it can deal with constraints, how it deals with surprises, and that's the leadership team. Because in the world that we're coming to, my discovery is that one person can't do it all. You have to have a leadership team that you trust, who will take responsibility, who are experts in their field or can become experts in their field, and they become the ones who make that company run.
Yes, and let me, you've really hit upon just a real raw issue in the business world, and I think the issue is this: when you're really good at something, that's what got you to where you are. And you're maybe unsure of what the next level skill is, or maybe you're unsure that someone else can do it as well as you can. But here's the problem. If you can never push it down to the next level and you never push that envelope to go yourself to the next level, then you're always going to be doing what you're doing. And ultimately, that boxes you in, and you your company won't grow past a certain point. If you really want to grow, it has to transcend your own ability to do that work. And you have to have other people around you that can do it. And if you don't trust them, then you're going to be doing it then you're going to be doing it yourself, because you're going to be checking everything twice. And then what's the point? So, you know, it's much easier said than done. I will say, I'm not saying it because I think that experience is easy. It's real difficult. But you have to keep in mind that that's the goal. It has to be.
Well, tell me, how did your business start? Was it your idea?
I am sort of a guy that always wanted to be an entrepreneur, but didn't do it right away. I had some businesses in middle school and high school doing little things, you know, but I wanted to go into healthcare, and I didn't see opportunity because the barriers to entry are so high. You know, there's just millions of dollars. I started helping low-income communities get health insurance. And, you know, it's just a mega business, hundreds of millions of dollars and stuff. But not a day went by that I wasn't thinking about, what if I did this on my own? Or what if I did a piece of this on my own? And ultimately, I couldn't wait anymore. And I just went out and did it. You know, there's a lot of experiences that I took from the big businesses along the way that I put into my mind. But I always try to think, how then could I apply that in a small business way? And here's a real important thing, I think, is that we can, you know, what we see on TV and the lessons we get from watching, you know, big networks, let's say, are usually lessons about huge businesses. Very rarely do you get lessons about small businesses. I think your show is trying to do that. And that's what I think small businesses need, because the lessons are not always transferable, right? So we can talk about FedEx, but you can't just come out of the gate and do what FedEx is doing. You can't come out of the gate and do what Apple Computer is doing, right? You have to look at, well, what is the context of what I have? What is the financial structure? I'm a small business person that wanted to do everything with no investors. That's not the way for everybody. But what is important is that I understand my structure limits me to only being able to invest from the retained earnings. That's the only way I can get it. Or I can borrow money. Right. But if I'm not going to take investors, that takes that off the table, and that limits your growth. So understanding your context and putting the lessons for the situation you're in, the financial structure, the corporate structure, critical to grow in the business.
All right. So as you created this idea, you began to work on it. You had to have other people. Talk to me about that process.
Sure. So the initial business, I thought I had come from, like I said, in a corporate world and comfortable with an executive, comfortable with lots of staff, right? At one point I had over 400 staff. I wasn't used to you know, figuratively and literally driving the truck. Within a couple months of me starting the business, I was driving a truck myself, taking orders over the phone. I hate to admit it, sometimes while driving, pulling over, typing credit card numbers into my app on the side of the road. Why did that happen? Because as soon as I got into the business that I thought I was going to go out and hire a lot of people to help me run, I realized right away I didn't have revenue. And if I didn't have revenue, how was I going to pay these people? I didn't have investors, right? So the way that I got the people was learning, like dropping to the lowest level of the business, doing everything myself, but always saying to myself, I can't do this forever. I'm just doing it until I can get enough business, get enough learning that I can hire the person and then train them and then move to the next level. It's the only way to do it. In terms of hiring people when I needed them, I did it as hourly as possible, because this way it didn't lock me into paying more than I could afford. I did it, slowly. You had to do it slowly. But it's that push and pull of, I got to push this down to someone else if I'm ever going to grow, versus I got to pay the bills. And that's really a big challenge.
Mm-hmm. We call that pushing down. We call that delegating.
Yes.
Right. And what's interesting is as you can trust those people that you're delegating it to, that frees you up to do the things that you're really good at and want to do.
There's an old saying, you know, I'm going to get it wrong, but when you manage everybody real closely, they call you micromanager, right? But so you push it down, and let's say they get it all screwed up, and then, you know, you messed up your business. So, you know, what are you going to do? So do you delegate or do you micromanage? The answer is you want to delegate, but you want it to be right. Right. So what, how do you do that? You have to have well-trained people you can trust, and you don't want to be micromanaging, but when it's especially with the small businesses, you got to get it right too. So right. Therein lies the challenge, and your ability to delegate and delegate how fast you can get to that relates a lot to the complexity of the content of your work. If you're delegating a highly technical skill it's going to take a lot longer to push that down, and it's going to be a little bit slower for scalability.
Well, and do you build that you delegate, but like Ronald Reagan said, you trust but verify, right? Yes. So you got to have a scorecard. You got to have, and everybody in the company has to have a measurable, at least one measurable, because that's how they're being measured to make sure that it's happening. And when you have that scorecard that you're looking at every week, then you don't have to micromanage. You see the results that are there.
I could not agree more. I mentioned at one point I managed 400 people, and they were all out in the field. And I said, how can I possibly, you know, you can't look over everybody, you know? So at first I would drive around and I would go and check up on somebody. And as soon as I got there, I realized, oh, they would jump up from their desk. They tighten their button on top tie and their tie. And, you know, they tell me what went on. They would tell me exactly what I would hear. And then I would leave, spend 15 minutes and go to the next person. Well, those 15 minutes was the best 15 minutes they had all day. Maybe I don't know what they're doing the other 7 hours and 45 minutes. So the only way to do it is with quantifiable measures, because then the measures themselves manage the people.
Yes.
Because let's say there's an incentive plan that you create, and then it says, well, it's going to be based on a certain number of productivity, a certain amount of quality, whatever else is important to you. Then that in and of itself is always in the back of their minds and saying, okay, I want to strive towards that, whether my boss is looking over me or not. Because let's face it, you just can't. Everybody's managing remote people now.
And what you want to move to is you want 100% of your people being the right people. I mean, they agree with your culture, with your values, and they're in the right seat. And by that right seat means they understand what this seat is about, what this job is about, these tasks. They want to do it. I mean, they're bouncing out of the bed to do it. They're not coming to work just for the check. They're coming because this is something they want to do. And then they have the capacity for it. They have the God-given ability to do this job. It's those three things that once you have that in place, you don't have to micromanage.
Right. And I will say this, you know, I think that it's important to recognize that people respond to different incentives. Not everybody responds to the same one. And if you have a plan in place that recognizes that there are 4 or 5 different types of incentives, you'll be more successful. So what do I mean by that? Some people just want money, right? So you got to take that into account. Even within money, some people want short-term money. Other people are more long-term focused. So how do you manage that? Well, maybe your incentive plan has a monthly reward, but an annual component. Some people want recognition and respect more than anything in the world. So do you have a quarterly dinner, or during the pandemic, a virtual happy hour where you give out certificates to your top people and tell them you appreciate them? That goes a long way. You know, other people respond to the meaning of what they're doing. And so you have to be talking about the mission and talking about how they're contributing to the mission. And when you create these incentive plans, don't think that there's just one thing. Recognize that you have to, you know, sort of hit upon all of these factors that are in the psychology of the people that work for you.
Having quarterly goals for everybody so that everybody's working toward that 90 and living in that 90-day world, so that, you know, we get back together at the end of 90 days. We take a look at what we said we would do. We take a look at it. Our goal would be 80% of what we said we would do, we got done. And if we didn't, then let's learn how to do it better next time. Then let's set our goals for the next 90 days. And then let's talk to the whole company about what we did. And let's get together once every 90 days, talk about the vision, where we're going, how we're going to get there, what we said we would do, what we did, and what we're getting ready to do, and help them all to set their own goals in their own departments. That, to me, is the way that you begin to build that trust so that you are actually able to delegate and know that it's going to happen.
Yeah. Yep. I agree completely. I'm a big believer also in promoting from within. I think that nothing kills morale more than when you got a team of people striving to grow, and then you bring somebody else in from the outside to take the position that they were hoping to grow into and manage them and put them on top of them. You know, that, you know, you might feel like you need to, maybe they're not good enough. I want to bring someone from the outside, but there's this unquantifiable perhaps value of promoting from within. Cause look what happens. Let's say you got a team of 10 and you promote one person. You're probably going to have one or two people mad because they thought they could have got that job. But you're also going to have several people that say, hey, this is a company that promotes from within. Yeah. Right. And you got to be careful that there's no perception of bias or anything like that. Of course. But if your company is growing, then they're going to say, well, you know what? There's going to be another opportunity and maybe that's me. So I'm going to work harder to get to that, you know? And as soon as you build up a few of those, then the culture starts to build upon itself where it's just known, hey, this company supports growth from the inside and I can get someplace here. And what does that do? It reduces turnover, it reduces people looking for someplace else to grow when they think they can grow into it. They don't have to look elsewhere. It allows you to use that example over and over again. And at those 90-day meetings, say, hey, look what happened to Joe. Look what happened to Sally. You know, they worked hard. They didn't have the background for that level when they started, but they got it here and we grew them. And you could be next. That's powerful stuff.
Yes. Now, how many employees do you have now? How big is the company?
We have 10 people.
Okay. All right. So do you have a leadership team that people are responsible for various areas?
Oh, we do. We have a technical team that does all the, you know, software development, and we have a director of that team that, you know, took several years of working with this individual to put them into that spot. And it was one of those situations where, hey, maybe, you know, that encouragement to say you can grow into a level of a director, you know, in this case, like coming from a developer to grow into a director. And maybe he says to himself, hey, if I, you know, no one else gave me that shot, I can do it here. There's a sense of also maybe loyalty that comes from it. And maybe there's also a sense of, hey, well, the next stop for me might be vice president, might be chief technology officer, you know. So you start to build that ladder. And, you know, with less technical staff, I think one growth path is often you move somebody. Sorry, I lost you for a second. You move somebody. Can you see me? You move somebody into roles of what we call a quality analysis. So if you're interested in looking at the quality team, who better to do that than somebody on the team, right? That can improve your quality, but it also gives someone an opportunity to grow.
All right. So you've got the technical team. You have somebody in charge of finance.
Yes. Now, with small businesses these days, it's always important to obviously manage your costs. And there's opportunities now to get fractional help in certain areas like legal. We have a fractional CFO, so we're able to get the value of an individual without having to have somebody full time because we don't necessarily need that right now. So areas like legal, accounting, finance, we use fractional services.
And you have somebody in charge of sales?
Yep, we do. We have a manager of the call center sales department.
How often does that team meet together?
All day, every day.
All day, every day.
I'm sort of half kidding, you know, but the team is on a call center. You know, we went from one to two. Now everybody's working from home. But, you know, by virtue of Slack and, you know, the phones, constantly interact and Zoom, Slack, Zoom, and the telephones, we're constantly just interacting with one another on cases that they're dealing with, updates and whatnot. Formal meetings are really tough in a call center where the phone never stops ringing. So we try to do them as much as we can to get everybody together, but we do more and more group discussions on email and Slack. And then you know, unfortunately, our annual holiday party we got to miss, but we're you know, that's an important one to bring the team together.
Let's schedule some time together. I want to hear more about this, and I want to, before we do that, I want to send you a copy of my book and get some feedback from you.
I would love to do that.
I will do that this afternoon. I've got an advanced copy, and I'll send it to you. It's a PDF, and you take a look at it.
Awesome.
And then we'll have my assistant Jen Bright will get in touch with you and set up a time where we have a conversation.
Great.
Excellent. Well, all right. Tell us how to get in touch with you. How to get into the staff class or help people, small businesses, onboard new people.
Yeah, well, the platform is staffglass.io. We would love to. It's brand new. Now the services, the drug testing, the background check, the occupational health, that's run through the company that I've owned for 10 years, which is Health Street. So all of the services are rock solid and been around for a long time. We think the software is rock solid too. But if you have listeners or viewers that want to beta test for us, we'd be happy to give them a free test if they want to go on to staffglass.io and indicate their interest for it. We'll be happy to do that for anybody that comes from your audience.
Well, I have a couple of people in mind that I want to introduce, and we'll talk about that.
Great. We'd love their feedback and how they feel it integrates with their business needs.
Excellent. Well, thanks a lot, Jared. We really enjoyed it. It's very informative and lots of fun. And I look forward to talking with you again soon.
I appreciate it. Talk soon.
You've been listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. To hear more of the programs in this podcast, go to www.willcrist.com.